Good news, Mr. Joe Devine. We have had our first email request to send someone happy birthday wishes.
Oh.
Yeah. If you email moviesyouforgot@gmail.com, Muggins McGee over here will read them belatedly. Uh-huh. And sometimes an email will touch his heart and he'll read it out.
And has this one touched your heart?
Oh, I think it has, yeah. Here we go. It's headlined, Rogue Request for Live Podcast. And this is from Hania, who she joined for the Discord. And here she goes. Hey, guys. Hope you're both doing well. This is Hania. You might remember me as Campsite Fox. Don't remember that one. On Discord.
I do remember Campsite Fox. Wasn't she the person that said that she doesn't really listen, but someone suggested that she join?
Yeah. Well, here you go. I joined your live podcast episode on Discord last time, having only listened to maybe 1.5 episodes of the pod before. Times have changed since, and I'm now a weekly listener. Congratulations on your first female listener who isn't married to either of you. How exciting.
What a fucking smackdown.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I just want to point out, that's not what the data says. The data says that technically 51% of our audience are women, okay?
Data says 51% of listener is
data
female.
Says. Data actually, listen, says. I think you'll remember that data just spoke normally, didn't he? But my point was more this anyway. The women that listen to our podcast, they're just very, very quiet. They're just quiet women that don't ever join the Discord and don't ever say anything to us on emails, almost as though they're not real.
Yeah,
they're just quiet women. Those are the groups of people that like us. All men like us, and then just specifically quiet women like us, okay?
This leads me to why I'm emailing. My friend James, JWC James on Discord, is the person who recommended the podcast to me and who you should thank for diversifying your fan base. It's his birthday soon, 6th of March. That's in the past.
I mean, not in is it in the past now, but it will be so far in the past by the time this goes out.
And I was hoping you could either say happy, belated early birthday, belated, depending on when you go live. I'm about 98% sure he will ask a question. So maybe it's for the future, the future Discord that we've promised and have yet to actually do. For reasons beyond me, he really likes both of you, and it'll be really cool or really embarrassing for him, hopefully the latter. And she says some other nice things, and that's it. And so then I said we'd do that, and then I said Joe would probably say something horrible. Before you respond, Joe, I just want the listeners to know that Joe has tried to say something funny 3 times and has gone down 3 particularly dark alleys. And none of the tones that he's tried to strike have been anywhere near to being right in response to what is just, you know, it's just a listener asking us to say happy birthday to her friend. That's all done. And Joe's really struggling.
I forgot the content. I couldn't even understand the content of the email because of the tone in which the email arrived.
Right.
Yeah.
It got on your craw.
It's, do you know, I will only accept total obedience. And if you're not interested in that, then why don't you? Let me just have a little re-go of that. Hold on. Well, 3 times, more like 5. Anyway, what was I was simply saying, Adam, that whilst I wish the man that is a reference to
James,
a happy birthday, James, yeah. Well, I hope you had a happy birthday, James, okay? I want you to teach your friend some manners about how to address me. And it's not about my demographics, yeah? Because you should see. No, it's actually quite nice.
Oh, this is very early. This started at 10 p.m. Hello.
Hi there. This is John calling from the Do You Wish You Could Take It All Back service. Is that Joe speaking?
Yep, speaking.
Hi, I heard I got a call that you were interested in using our service. Is that correct?
I've really got myself into a little bit of a muddle.
Right. Tell me about it.
I'm on a podcast, and I bet you get so many calls from podcast people.
To be honest, it's like 90% of the service now. It's just people doing podcasts wishing they could take it back.
Yeah, well...
Has the podcast been published yet?
Hasn't been published yet.
Is it happening now?
It is happening now.
Oh, so you can take it back.
Yeah, but then my co-host is particularly sort of needy and I know he'll want to include some of it.
Right, yeah.
There's got to be
some... negotiation.
Yeah, but there's got to be some way that I can take back... I kept going down these weird, dark, like, misogynist alleys when a listener had just sent in a happy birthday.
Right.
And I couldn't handle it. I tried so many times. I kept restarting.
I assume you were trying to go down those avenues ironically, and each time it sort of didn't really work and sounded like you meant something that you didn't really mean, right?
Yeah, and then also I worry that people, for that kind of irony to work, the audience has to trust me and my intentions, and I don't really think they do because I'm quite a confusing person.
No, that's fine. That's a pretty common problem. And you said that your co-host is needy and is going to want to bargain to keep some of this in.
At the least, I know he wants listeners to email in.
Is he as popular? Is he as popular as you?
Absolutely not. No.
Does he have as many followers or anything in those kind of ordinary metrics? Would he have any real idea what it would be like to for many people to think that he was a bad person?
No, but like we could just leave him reading out the email and just cut me out.
Oh yeah, I think you could do that for sure. So the agreement then, do you think you can get that with him? This agreement would be that none of the bad jokes that you made would be kept in. Maybe a reference to them would be allowable, such as a conversation like this, for example.
Mm.
And if this phone call were to be cut in immediately after a hard cut that might confuse audiences, then they'd have some idea of what happened, but not enough of an idea to form a negative opinion.
Right, because on my famous podcast that I do, like inextricably linked, it's a really cheap little joke that we do, but that when anyone in the show, or particularly me, says something... There's just a hard cut, and then I say, something got cut. And
it's I've heard that before. That is a famous podcast.
It's really famous.
Yeah, that's a really good one.
It's this really cheap backdoor to immediate humour.
No, I think it's cheeky. I don't think it's cheap at all. I think it's actually like premium and cheeky.
Well, I've looked at myself in the long and hard in the mirror, and I've realised that it's a hack excuse for me to both have my cake and eat it. I love having cake and eating it.
That's you're like a modest guy with some self-doubt, so you would question your own thoughts and intentions, but that's just because you're a good person. I actually think that's a fantastic bit, and that show is one of the best shows, so I have full faith in you. And now I'm starting to think that you should leave in whatever it was that you said. Because you're clearly someone who doesn't make misjudgments readily.
Yeah, I do like to brag about like all the stuff I know about mines and unions and history. And
mines?
Yeah, Moria.
You know a lot about mines, do you? Oh, like fantasy mines.
Yeah.
Yeah, got it.
Yeah, I just, you know, this guy I do the podcast with, he just doesn't realise how heavy the crown lies on my head, and about people sometimes are coming out to get me. He's just some poor schmo. No one gives a fuck about this guy.
Yeah,
he could say anything. He could say the N-word, and
I think he should
be fine.
Why didn't he say it? Oh, doesn't seem like he's that untouchable. Okay. Anyway, there you go. That's it. Service complete?
Yeah, I think we're sorted. Thank you.
That's £1 million.
Yeah, well, I'm good for it. I'm doing pretty well for myself.
Oh, by the way, happy birthday, James. You fucking dick.
Adam is the host now. The dynamic works better when Adam is the host. Adam prefers to be the host, and Joe prefers to be the participant. It's better overall when Adam is the host, and Joe is the participant. Let it never be spoken of again. The ghost. 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 The ghost.
Hello and welcome to the Movies You Forgot podcast with me, your host, Adam Richmondo. This is the show.
You went a little bit pirate there in the middle. Hello and welcome to the Movies You Forgot. Looking for the treasure.
This is the show where we chat about the movies or films that we forgot we'd even seen in the first place. I'm joined as ever by my co-host, my Mr. Joe Devine. He knows his minds. He knows his Moria.
Did you say I'm joined as ever by my Mr. Joe Devine?
Yeah.
As though I'm a standard issue. You can get several of me. Mr. Joe Devine, order the service for a podcast co-host. You know, have a reverent, witty, and not reverent, irreverent. What's reverent? Is reverent the opposite of irreverent?
You're trying. You're all over the shop today, mate. It's great.
I'm tired, man.
What's happened?
You know what it is? I stayed up really late last night to watch the Oscars.
Right.
And now what's happened to me in the last year is that I've gone from being a young person who can sleep until whenever, because I have a body that is young and will just sleep, to a middle-aged person who wakes up early regardless of the circumstances. So I just didn't get anywhere near enough sleep. I got back home really late last night, went to bed about 4:30, woke up at 10, just couldn't stay asleep. So I'm tired. And I think maybe it's possible that I won't be that lucid or make that many funny comments.
He's got his Oscar brain on.
Yep.
On today's episode, we are doing, let's bring up the old Letterboxd,
the big Oscar movie.
It was up there. It was in the mix. It was 2004's National Treasure.
National.
John Turteltaub. 131 Mins. Of course, this is a Bruckheimer, Jerry Bruckheimer production. And
Brucker.
We've touched on Bruckheimer.
I know. I couldn't remember in what episode, though.
Pirates of the Caribbean. But we didn't get to dig into Bruckheimer. You weren't familiar, but maybe we'll do a little Bruckheimer. In order to break the code, one man will have to break all the rules. I don't mind that. I quite like that as a little a little sting, yeah.
You certainly seem to enjoy it the way you were saying it.
Modern treasure hunters, led by archaeologist Ben Gates, Nicolas Cage, search for a chest of riches, and I'm not talking about a woman's chest, rumoured to have been stashed away by George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, and Benjamin Franklin during the Revolutionary War. The chests, whereabouts, there's no treasure chest.
There is
the
no
chest's
chest,
whereabouts may lie in secret clues embedded in the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. And Gates is in a race, there's only one of those, to find the gold before his enemies do. This film stars Nick Cage, as said, Diane Kruger, Justin Bartha, Sean Bean, the Bean Machine.
Oh, the Bean Machine.
John Voight and Harvey Keitel. Tell me, this is a film you got me on, Joe. You've seen it a lot, I think. Where's National Treasure sit in your canon? It's a film that you've watched like dipped in a fair bit.
I don't think so. I think you must be misremembering. But
I read too much into it.
It's usually my thing. You didn't misremember. You just assumed that I'd seen it many times. To be fair, it is the kind of film that I might have seen many times. Is that what you meant?
Yeah, I think I was conflating it with the likes of Phone Booth and Underworld and like that kind of film that you just sort of, you know, it lives in your, not to say it's as bad as those, but it kind of lives in that kind of wheelhouse as, it's just on, you know, you're the right age, 28.
It's on. Yeah, I was 13 for most of that year. This movie was around when I was 13 for most of a year, you know. I don't know. I think I'm not certain that beyond once I've ever seen this all the way through. you know. I mean, I as in more than one time. Certainly not something that I've returned to many times. So it's not deeply embedded within the canon. It's sort of, you know, canon fringes, canon adjacent. I remember this film giving me the same sort of feeling that The Da Vinci Code gave me with Tom Hanks, which I suppose is the probably the more famous of the two, or this maybe the more, I don't know actually if it's the more popular of the two, or if it got bigger gate receipts. But it's the same sort of story, American view of, you know, American puzzles over history.
And it's probably more rewatched than The Da Vinci Code. I mean, really, it's a mix. It's an ungodly mix of Mission Impossible, Indiana Jones, and The Da Vinci Code.
Yes.
That's what it is.
And I emphasis on the ungodly, I would say. It does take some...
Can I be honest, yeah, whilst you pause for the word? I kind of thought that this was a kind of a fondly held movie,
yeah,
nostalgic movie, and I was going to spend the entirety of the, well, at least the first half of the podcast, pretending that I thought this was actually quite entertaining.
Oh, right.
And I was going to I've never done this before. I thought it would be quite amusing, because I would have thought you'd rewatch this and you'd be on at me straight away to be like, how can you not enjoy this? It's just harmless, silly fun. And I was going to nip that in the bud, preempt you by saying, yeah, this is really fun. This has got lots of fun little moments and it's quite fun. And I was going to reel you in. Right, and then right. About the 45-minute midway point, I was going to go, do you know what, Joe? I'll be honest with you.
I've been lying to you this
I've been
whole
lying
time.
To you. This is fucking shit and you're a moron. God.
That's so mean, man. Why would you do that? That's like you're trying to make me vulnerable so that I'm at my most open, and then when I'm open you slice me up with a knife.
It's because you've come for Mission Impossible so many times and...
Yeah, but I don't lull you into a false sense of security about Mission Impossible.
Well, you don't need to. I'm open. I'm an open person. You're a closed book. You're the walls are up.
Not true. Not true. Absolutely not true at all. The different... You know, I think this is better than Mission Impossible. I'll say that for a start. I don't really like this film, but it's much more watchable and enjoyable than Mission Impossible. And both of them have got John Voight in, and John Voight's better in this than he is in Mission Impossible. And look, if that's the game you want to play... Why don't we do that? Why don't
he's
we play
out,
that game?
He's come out lashing. He's
no,
come
yeah,
out
because
lashing.
You just told me you were going to assassinate me. You told me that your plan was to lather me up in butter and then pop me in the frying pan.
No. I just thought it would have been fun. Because this film is so bad, I thought just also for entertainment's
it's
sake.
It's not that bad. It's fine. It's absolutely fine.
No, it's appalling. It's one of the worst films I've seen this year. I had to watch... The Rock, directed by Michael Bay, also starring Nicolas Cage. Because I wanted some proper Bruckheimer. I wanted some proper Nick Cage, just to make sure that I wasn't being an old man about stuff. The Rock came out in 1996. It's an action movie. Yeah. It's got a very silly premise. Ed Harris is a Marine. He steals some rockets with some horrible poison in.
Wait, is The Rock the thing... with the little green chemicals inside the rocket. That's famous for a very different reason, isn't it, that movie?
Yes. I can't believe you haven't seen the movie, but you do know the... Go on, tell everyone your smart little thing.
I haven't seen the film, but I've seen a scene from the film. A scene where... Is it Ed Harris plus... Maybe Nick... Maybe, no, isn't Sean... No, it's not Sean Connery, is it? It's Ed
Yeah,
Harris.
Sean Connery.
It is Sean Connery. They're trying to remove this very dangerous... green fluid from inside.
They're little
of
glass,
the bombs.
Glass. They're little glass balls filled with green VX gas.
Right.
And you see it a couple of times, and you see the effect of the gas.
Yeah.
It's very cool. But it features in an Adam Curtis documentary.
It features in an Adam Curtis documentary because, as it turns out, the main source that UK and US Secret Service intelligence had that led to the invasion of Iraq in 2003 was a source. I can't remember the code name of the source. It's quite funny. Anyway, these two countries went to war with Iraq, or invaded Iraq, on the strength of the evidence provided by this source. And retrospectively, as it turns out, that while people at the time, in theory, believed that the source was describing the intricacies of nuclear weapons, or weapons of mass destruction at least, not nuclear weapons. As it turned out, he was just actually describing what had happened in the film The Rock, and no one either realized that or, you know, chose to acknowledge that at the time. So that's why The Rock is famous, because...
That's not why The Rock is famous.
Well, that's why The Rock is famous in my house.
Right,
because it's whoever whoever gave that information had watched The Rock.
Anyway, and it's a fantastic film. I thought maybe... I hadn't seen it in 15 years. I was like, oh, maybe it's dated and it's cheesy. And it's not, you know, it's
really...
Do you
feel like invading a country now you've watched it, or is it not? It hasn't had that effect on you.
But it also connects with National Treasure in that they both feature, in one instance, a protagonist and in another, an antagonist, whereby, hang on, I wrote this down. In National Treasure, Nick Cage's character says, he keeps saying this, he keeps talking about the Founding Fathers, and he says, he talks about the men who did something wrong to do what they knew was right. Mm-hmm. And in Nick Cage's life and worldview in National Treasure, that means stealing the Declaration of Independence. Now, in The Rock, the baddie, played by Ed Harris, he plays a baddie, but he's one of the best baddies in cinema. He says, the Tree of Liberty must be refreshed from time to time with the blood of patriots, which is a Benjamin Franklin quote. And he does something horrible to get justice. So the worldview of Bruckheimer is in both of these movies.
Mm. But it's in the protagonist and the antagonist.
Yeah, well, it works when it's The Rock, but then when you watch National Treasure... This is a particularly troubling worldview, you know, because like it just says it just justifies anything horrible you want to do.
Right. Yeah. If you are the protagonist of your own story, as long as you believe it's the right thing, then it's fine.
Right. And in 1996, it's the baddie. And then come 2004, who knows what's happened? What happened between 1996 and 2004?
I think Man United won a treble.
Yeah. That might be it.
What else happened? Y2K.
Yeah. Your favorite thing.
Oh yeah, Space Jam was released. Space Jam.
Fellowship came out.
Fellowship came out.
Two Towers and Return of the King came out.
Return of the King came out in 2007, I think.
Oh, did it?
Didn't it?
I don't know. No,
it didn't. It came out in 2005, I think. I think I've got that right wrong. How embarrassing. How embarrassing.
Oh, I genuinely didn't realise we'd get onto 9/11, but that is right between the two movies, The Rock and National Treasure.
What's interesting about it, though, is like I can't think of another example of an American misusing a quote from a founding father in order to try to justify something that is blatantly wrong. I can't think of any other examples of that happening.
Well, that's what's so great about The Rock, because Ed Harris says that to Sean Connery... And Sean Connery...
Who is Scottish.
He retorts an Oscar Wilde quote.
Right.
About, here we go, Oscar Wilde.
He says, it's either me or the curtains. One of us has to go.
He says, Oscar Wilde said, patriotism is the virtue of the vicious. And Ed Harris hits him about the back of the head. And he says, thank you for proving my point.
It's interesting that, isn't it? So what you're saying is in 1996, in a popular American film... Someone described patriotism, a goodie described patriotism as a virtue of the vicious.
Yep.
Yeah, that is very interesting, isn't it? Because, of course, I don't know if you know this, but the thing that happened between this film and The Rock was 9/11 was something that happened between those two things, and the Patriot Act, of course. And yeah, I feel as though I can't imagine Nick Cage's character saying anything like that. If anything, I actually think Sean Bean's character would be more likely to say, he'd be like, oh, Nick, patriotism is a virtue of the vicious. Not me, I'm just an independent guy looking for some treasure. You know? It's interesting how the antagonist and the protagonist positions have completely swapped there. Bruckheimer obviously feels differently in 2004.
Oh yeah, he'll fly whichever way the wind is blowing. You know, let's pander to the cheap seats, and
they call him the prevailing Bruckheimer. Yeah, the westerly Bruck.
Which way is the wind blowing? Just look to Jerry Bruckheimer.
Just have a look. Tell you. Which way is he facing? Is he facing east? That's that. Then it's blowing in that direction, because the man will never face the wind. Never. That's what I've heard about Jerry Bruckheimer.
But the way that...
With a J.
This is why National Treasure is such a shit film, because it's directed by a nobody called John Turteltaub.
Yeah, Turteltaub.
And whereas Michael Bay, whatever you say about him, he knows how to shoot a flick and edit a flick, and The Rock looks great, the action sequences are fantastic. National Treasure looks like shit, and the action's rubbish, and it's got this horrible, like, zoom, you know, little kind of horrible little zoom fade type effect going on.
Yeah.
You don't like an action movie, do you?
Not really. I just want to push back on the John Turteltaub thing, though, because John Turteltaub, as you'll know, is the director of the film Cool Runnings, which is a great film.
Not an action movie, though.
No, but he's not a nothing guy. He directed Cool Runnings. That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool.
No, he's a nothing director of nothing movies for mainstream nobodies who want to shovel popcorn in their mouths.
I don't know. I don't know if that's the case. You know, I think he was the director of...
You Were Sleeping.
The Meg. He made The Meg. He made National Treasure 2. He made The Kid with
Bruce Willis. Yeah, that's a notorious stinker.
Cool Runnings. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like that one. Do you remember the Swiss? Are they the Swiss? Is it the Swiss team in Cool Runnings? They're the baddies?
Yeah, they're really racist. The Germans, maybe. I think initially in the script they would have been Germans, and then they said, no, this is too on the nose. Can you make them Norwegian or something?
I think I'm remembering now that there are just multiple types of, like, Central and Northern Europeans who could virtually be played by the same actors, that, you know, and they level up in terms of, you know, indecency as the film goes on. I think the Germans are the final level of bad, but I think the Swiss are in there somewhere. Maybe the Norwegians are in there somewhere as well. You know, the snow people, the sort of snow people.
The Scandies. It's quite funny because whenever the Scandinavians talk about that movie, they're so hurt. They all talk about, they all say, we were all so supportive of them in real life.
Right.
This Hollywood movie.
This is bullshit. Like Irish people watching Sinners, you know.
You've come here and you've brought good and wealth, but you have also brought your bad habits as a backslider. You've lusted after women and you have abandoned your child. Your child that you raised, you have abandoned all because he was sick and you have sinned. So say it now. I am a sinner. Say it louder. I am a sinner.
I am a sinner.
Louder, Daniel. I am a sinner.
I am a sinner.
I am sorry, Lord.
I am sorry, Lord.
I want the blood.
I want the blood.
You have abandoned your child.
I've abandoned my child.
I will never backslide.
I will never backslide.
I was lost, but now I am found.
I was lost, but now I'm found.
I have abandoned my child.
I've abandoned my child.
Say it louder. Say it louder.
I've abandoned my child. I've abandoned my child. I've abandoned my boy.
Beg for the blood!
Give me the blood, Lord, and let me get away!
Do you accept Jesus Christ as your Savior?
Yes, I do.
But if you want to see a great Nick Cage performance,
yeah,
this is not where you're going to get it.
No, of course not. Of course not. But I just want to be clear. That is not what I... When I said this film is absolutely fine, and if listeners could see my face when I was saying that, I'm kind of almost, you know, when you walk into a room and there's a little smell, you go, oh, and your nose wrinkles up, it pulls back a little bit. There's a peelage of the face. You go, oh, what's that smell? What I'm saying, imagine that. Oh, absolutely fine. It's just absolutely fine, right? It's not.
It's 130 mins. How are you not angry that you had to watch this film again?
Well, because I sort of half watched it while I was doing other things. Because I watched it in three chunks throughout the day, because I was excited to talk to you. That was before I knew that you were going to try and sabotage me. I like Nick Cage. I like that woman, what from Inglourious Basterds. I'm going to say something now. Okay. I think Sean Bean is fantastic in this film. I think Sean Bean is so believable as a villain, and sort of until the very end when he's willing to kill them and leave them in the pit. That's a bit bad, but he's so interesting. Like he's. I love how the subtlety of his character. He's not violent with his henchmen like a lot of baddies in these sort of standard films are. You know, there's one bit where he's running out of this museum following a kid who's helping our goodies to decode something or other. I don't fucking know. And Sean Bean gets to the top of the stairs and he's scratching his chin, looking. And one of his henchmen shows up and says, "Oh, Sean Bean, what is it?" And he says, "I don't know yet." You know, but not in a sort of sinister way where you think he might just snap and kill the henchman for no reason. Because he's not pure evil. He's Sean Bean. I mean, his character's insane. It doesn't make any sense that he's sort of there as an explorer at the beginning, and then it just so happens that he says, "In a previous life, I used to be a criminal." And I don't know, it's very, that stuff's very confusing. But I love to watch Sean Bean in this movie. He's just so much fun, man. He's just fantastic.
What's happened is he's read that script and there's nothing on the page.
No.
And he's decided, you can see he's brought all this backstory.
Ultra realism. Yeah, he has. You can see it.
You can see that he's decided to play it like, me and Nick Cage used to be the best of friends and we really, really connected. Sure. And I really love him. Right. And I wanted to do this. I wanted to go on this journey with him. And that's the center of my character. And then also, I do really, really love money.
And treasure. Not just money. I love treasure. Because this guy's so good at robbing and stuff. He's stealing the Declaration of Independence. He just go and rob a bank and have money. He doesn't care about money. He cares about treasure.
But the film around him and it does not support or make any sense at all. It
doesn't acknowledge him.
No, and so
imagine doing that though. Imagine being
what
cast
a waste of time
in a Disney film called National Treasure opposite Nick Cage, knowing what the film was essentially, and then deciding, what if I played this dead seriously, as though this wasn't the film it was? What if I decided to be a villain in a kind of complex, nuanced psychodrama where I was and wasn't evil at the same time, and where, you know, I'm a normal person as well as, you know, quite a corrupt individual? That it's absolutely fantastic. I'm watching the film thinking, and watching Sean Bean and going, yeah, I wonder what would be happening in his film. I wonder what's happening next in his film. So you ask me how I'm not furious, because I just spent 2 hours watching Bean, the Bean Machine. I mean, if he wasn't in the film, I'd be upset. I'd be really upset.
He's called Ian, and his main henchman is called Sean. And you're like, who made this film, and why did no one say, hang on a sec, this is stupid? It, like, Nick Cage has to say the name Ian about 10 times.
He must have played an Ian 5 times.
Doesn't matter. You can't be called Ian in a Hollywood movie. And then also, what the other thing I learned from when you watch The Rock, if you look at The Rock, have a look at the cast list of The Rock. The supporting actors in that film, it's name after name after name. You've got Michael Biehn from The Terminator knocking around in a maybe 10-minute role. You've got a guy from The West Wing playing Womack. You've got, what's he called? William Forsythe. You'd know him if you saw him. Just face after face after face.
Yeah,
of these, it just feels so rich. And then you cut forward to National Treasure, and I put laying the door at Jerry Bruckheimer. He's fallen asleep at the wheel. Ian's henchmen look like these big, like, potato-faced nobodies that they picked up from
Nobodyville. Yeah.
From Nobodyville.
Yeah.
And it's like, did these people ever star in a movie ever again, even as background? No, they've got no texture. It's so horrible to watch.
I just want to tell you that David Diane Fisher, who was born and raised in North London, by the way, and only started acting when he was 28 years old, he's one of the henchmen in National Treasure. He's also in The Dark Knight Rises. He is the voice of a popular character in Kingdom Hearts 2. He was in NCIS Los Angeles, you know. And he was in an episode of Rush Hour, the TV series. So I bet you're feeling a bit stupid right now.
Why are Americans obsessed with the Crusades and Freemasons?
I think we all know why.
All right, that's the end of that segment.
No, do you want me to tell you why?
No, that's funny.
It's the only thing I've come. I want to talk about. It's the only thing I've got, so I want to talk about it. But I don't know, but my personal pet theory is because Americans don't have any history, or at least that's the kind of joke, isn't it? That they're a very young nation that can only look back. I mean, the Declaration of Independence is their oldest thing. They haven't got anything older than that, have they? In fact, I guess technically it was signed before the nation existed. And so in many ways, it's not even an American thing. It's sort of, it's the most recent thing just before America. So I think one of the reasons they like history, specifically stuff like the Freemasons and the Templars and the Crusades and all of that stuff, is because it helps Americans feel as though they have some kind of ownership over world history, or they have some kind of connection. And also because America, as well as being, you know, made up obviously by people who were indigenous to the Americas when Europeans arrived and decimated the populations there, lots of Americans have their familial roots in Europe and in the rest of the world. So in some senses, they also have, you know, they feel some sense of ownership over these stories as well. And maybe they connect to it through that. Some sense of relevancy.
Yeah, it's because, like, now, secret societies, cabals, that people in America aren't a fan of them at all, and yet back in the 2000s, like, you know, maybe before then, but like in cinema and your Dan Browns, etc.
Yeah,
people love the idea of the Freemasons and secret groups looking out to protect and look after this flame of American freedom. Now your secret groups are blood sucking cannibal paedophiles.
Well, they're fucking kids, aren't they? They're fucking kids.
Yeah, but so now it wouldn't be cool to be say, oh yeah, I'm part of a secret club. I'm even if you said it was like, oh, I'm a Freemason and I'm about looking after protecting Americans' freedom.
Yeah, that's
they'd be like,
right.
Yeah, but you're probably also fucking kids as well, aren't you?
I agree. And you see it around London too. You've got to be careful. You know, sometimes people say things like, yeah, I'm part of an exclusive club. And then they get attacked by hordes of young people. And you can hear the cries from underneath the pile of bodies. I meant Soho House. I was saying Soho House, you know.
I mean, you can't even be a member of a secret group anymore.
You
can't. It's been completely ruined. But so,
what about a secret WhatsApp group? Can you be a member of a secret WhatsApp group? You know, you've got two-factor authentication. What is it called? Double end
dildo.
Double.
Yeah.
You can be a member of a secret WhatsApp club with a double end dildo. No, I'm talking about it being two-factor authentication. I'm saying, what's the word when they like fucking do the thing on one end and then they undo it on the other? Oh my god!
I don't know. I wouldn't know because you're the one who is a member of these groups.
You do know because WhatsApp tells you every day. It's like, oh, it's like coded. It's enshrouded, encoded. Oh yeah, encoded. Right? That's what they call it. Double encoded ended, double ended dildo.
Yeah, you need to be Alan Turing to bloody read a bloody message these days.
I am a golden god! I am a golden god!
Hey, Russell, go!
Oh,
you know, you didn't like this film. Okay. Fine, fine, fine. But there is a scene, isn't there, at the bottom of a pit underneath the church where John Voight, who plays a father to Nicolas Cage, who is estranged from him at the beginning of the film, who is a man who he's obviously down on his luck, his values, doesn't believe in the same values that his son and his father do.
Because he's followed Voight, has followed his father, Christopher Plummer.
Sure.
On a fool's errand, so it seems.
So it seems, so, you know, and he's bitter and angry about it, and he doesn't want his son to make the same mistakes he did. He's been telling him for years, you're wrong, fella. You're wrong, pal. You're wrong, gee whiz.
You're wasting your life, son.
You're wasting your life. I know. I'm telling you, you're wasting your life. Anyway, that's the theme of the film. That's the personal arc of the film. And at the bottom of this pit, when it seems as though all luck is gone and that they've found the room but the treasure's not there, Nicolas Cage is at the bottom of his ebb. He's thinking, we're going to die as well. We're going to die down here. And I really thought I was going to find the treasure. Who steps in? It's Daddy. John Voight says, no, you know what, actually? You were right. I was wrong. All these years I was wrong and you were right and I'm sorry. It's actually quite a nice moment. I think it's because John Voight's doing the acting and John Voight's great, you know?
Yeah, and the treasure was Daddy's acceptance and Daddy's pat on the back.
Yeah, and then you get the treasure as well. So it's a cake and eat it moment. But I was thinking about you when I watched that scene. I thought, could there ever be a hole that Adam could be in with his dad? Could Adam's dad ever look at him and say, yeah, you were right the whole time. Memento is a good film. Or, I don't know, I'm not sure what it would have been that you would be right about, that he would be wrong about. But did that not make you feel anything, that scene?
No, yeah, it just made me feel sad.
It did make you feel sad.
Well, just like, oh, this will never happen and it's complete bollocks.
Do you not think Nicolas Cage thought that, though, before... You know,
but Cage in the movies never—you don't get any sense that that's what he's looking for. And no. Cage doesn't play it like if Sean Bean had been playing that.
Oh, Bean
would have played it like,
it.
Oh no, I am actually just looking for Dad's pat on the back. Yeah. Out of the blue again, the movie decides to play the dad card. Nick Cage doesn't—he barely blinks an eye. He barely gives a fuck that his dad said,
doesn't care.
You were right all along.
It's very disappointing because I'm thinking this is a lovely ending. Actually, this is a very nice moment, and I know they're going to find the treasure anyway because it's an American movie and they can't leave things alone. They haven't got any history, but I do wish that Nick Cage, you know, either had the wherewithal or the director editor. Had made more of it in the moment, left something else in. No, there's nothing. You're right. There's nothing there. It's like they've decided that in 2004, Nick Cage as a protagonist of this movie is not allowed to. He's not even allowed to well up. He's not even allowed to have one eye look like it might spew a tear because he's a real man.
Yeah, he's decided either he's willfully ignored that element and gone, oh, that doesn't really speak to me. I'm not interested.
Yeah.
I'm not interested in that. Or. He's thick and he's not actually this, he's not, you know, he didn't get that bit in the script and just played it. Like he basically just turned up and phoned it in. He feels quite a phoned in performance from Nick Cage.
Do you know what my favorite line is?
You got a favorite line?
Yeah, I got a favorite line of the film. It's after they've discovered the glasses, the 3D glasses that people use to watch 3D films in the wall. And then he gives them to his friends and his friends say, what are these? And he says, some kind of ocular device, you know. And I think like, wow, they really gave up at this point, didn't they, in the script. They really didn't try hard here at all, you know. They've just pulled out the thesaurus and they've gone, what's one after glasses? Ocular, oh yeah, some kind of ocular, I don't know, fucking device, I don't know, yeah. Just say some weird glasses, I don't know.
I found this. Some kind of ocular device. Some kind of ocular device. Some kind of ocular device. Some kind of ocular device.
I'd take pleasure in gutting you, boy. I'll take pleasure in gutting you, boy.
What's wrong with these people, huh?
Rewatch, it all comes back to The Rock.
Me when I'm doing the Iraq inquiry.
You know? What?
I said me. That's like a kind of meme thing. Oh, yeah. I say me when. So you've just said it all comes back to The Rock. And I say me when I'm doing the Iraq inquiry. You know, and yeah. I'm wrapping up my evidence. I say, Your Honor, it all comes back to The Rock. Can you smell what The Rock is cooking, Your Honor? Because it's corruption.
Because that's how memes work. They're like a verbal thing.
Yeah, yeah.
It's
yeah.
not like they're not. It's not text on a picture.
Sure.
The best memes are always vocalized and described. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I find.
The thing is, I don't even need to say anything at this point because you're digging your own grave. But please go on. Please go on.
No, I'm not. I do think that that's what makes a great meme.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Me when I don't know what a meme is. Yeah.
The Nick Cage in that, in The Rock. And
I feel like you always want to talk about The Rock and I'm always sidetracking you away from talking about The Rock. Come on, talk about The Rock. Tell me why The Rock's so good. Because you watched it as well, didn't you? You watched The Rock.
Watch The Rock. Mm. Sean Connery is the alpha of that movie.
Right.
And he's effectively an aged James Bond. Lovely bit of casting. He didn't think much of the script and he got these two English scriptwriters to come over and punch up his dialogue. And he's got some killer one-liners in that. Fantastic. Lovely bit of business going on.
I like the idea that you can tell it, within one script that one of the actors is famous and rich enough to like have his lines touched up. So every time he says something, it's amazing. But the rest of the time, the script is just normal, right?
Oh, no. And I think they also had a look at other people's lines as well.
Wasn't just his.
Nick Cage plays, he's the debater, the nerd. He knows about chemical warfare and that's about it.
Right.
And he makes so much more sense as the... In that combo.
So that's played by Justin Bartha in this one. Yeah.
He just doesn't work as the leading man. He always has to play this square. In this, he doesn't. He plays a square-jawed hero. There's none of that edgy, cool Nick Cage-ness to it. And he's got no one to like buff up against. Or there's no, I mean, he's got Sean Bean, but he doesn't banter or he doesn't do anything that he doesn't respond to anything that Bean's giving him. Bean's giving him all this stuff to play with. So's John Voight. Nick Cage couldn't give less of a fuck.
There's a moment in the bottom of that. Sorry to go back to the bottom of the pit again, but a lot was happening at the bottom of that pit. And let's be honest, they were down there for a long time. But anyway, they get there. And Sean Bean says to Nick Cage, he says, oh, looks like you took a bit of a nasty fall. You want to be careful. Falls like that could kill you or something. You know, it's sort of like doing it's a bit of evil banter, isn't it? So like, you better watch out. You could be dead. But it's also quite playful. And in some ways, Sean Bean plays it like you said earlier, you know, they are best friends. And Sean Bean plays it like he's actually concerned that Nick Cage might have hurt himself, you know. And then Nick Cage, he says, yeah, you should try it. You should try it sometime. Which is like his, I don't know, warped comeback of like, maybe you should kill yourself jumping off a thing, you know. But in this moment, in the scene, I'm thinking, well, not only is Sean Bean cool, he's got his banter down hard. Also, he seems actually genuinely concerned. He seems like he's kind of being nice. And then Nick Cage, who is the hero of the film, his retort is boring, it's shit, it's unfunny, and it's just mean as well. It's like, you know, you might as well say, go kill yourself, guy. You know, it's really terrible writing, and it's a terrible performance. But it's yet another reason why I love Sean Bean in this movie. The Beanpole.
Like Cage, he's also the hero in Con Air. Have you seen Con Air?
Yeah, I've seen Con Air, yeah.
That kind of works because he's surrounded by so many other crazy characters. And then he can play it kind of straight and he's got his southern drawl.
Yeah.
But that doesn't really stand the test of time in the same way that The Rock does. But then Nick Cage has just starred in a litany of shit action movies where he plays the star. And it's just deeply uninteresting.
That's true. Do you want to guess how many films Nick Cage has been in?
100.
Actually, all I can do is say how many acting credits he has. I can't say how many films he's been in. But yeah, he has 118 acting credits. And he is listed as upcoming projects. He's in 9.
I remember when he was a joke in recent memory, and I think maybe it was even as long ago as 10 years ago, mm-hmm. he managed to get out of joke hell, and he's remained now a kind of a national treasure,
yeah, man.
For want of a better word.
He's there.
I think he went bankrupt and then was starring in any old shit and didn't seem to care. He just keeps going. He'll be in anything. And then if you throw enough shit at the wall, there's some good stuff. I don't know why I'm coming down on him so hard, because I watched him in Dream Scenario last year, mm-hmm. and he was fantastic in that. He's really, really good.
He's terrific.
Yeah, but then he's not in shit like this.
No, but like, I think the Nick Cage cycle appears to be, and I people have written about this a lot, none of which I've read. I'm not very educated on it, but so my stab at this is that the Nick Cage cycle appears to be, he does a lot of big movies when he doesn't have any money, or like, you know, movies that will pay him, or just a high volume of films. I mean, but I'm scrolling and scrolling and scrolling. There are few people who work this much in Hollywood, okay? So there's that. And then also, he does a lot of like the one for you, one for me movies. He's in a whole bunch of like very unusual, interesting, maybe not art house, but like certainly indie style movies, where he seems very engaged in the notion of trying different things, experimenting with his filmography, playing strange roles, playing strange characters. He doesn't seem to mind being in smaller movies as well that might not work. He doesn't seem to mind being in indie movies that don't work. He seems like the kind of guy where like he's worked out that the secret of Hollywood is just to do everything and not have a filter, and it almost doesn't matter. Like, you know, I've done a cursory scroll, but I reckon we could find 10 excellent Nick Cage films. Like, the kind of films that we would say, like, that's art. That belongs in the artistic canon. I think there'd be at least 10 of those films. And then there'd be another 10 that would be bizarre indie choices that our cult follows, that people really like, that if Nick Cage had only done those movies and then not been in all the other stuff, people would say he's one of the coolest actors of all time.
Yeah, and then there would be 30 to 50 total shit.
Yeah, it's bizarre.
Which is fine, actually. As a ratio goes,
yeah,
maybe that's fine.
Did you see Pig?
No, I don't want to watch Pig. I've decided I don't want to watch it.
It was fine. It was pretty good. It was interesting, you know? He was upset about his pig. Apparently The Surfer was pretty good, right?
Yeah, I quite like that. Yeah, he's that would fall into the 10 sort of interesting cult oddities.
Okay. Well, Dream Scenario, you seem to enjoy that one.
Fantastic.
Okay, I'm scrolling back. I'm going backwards in time rather than forwards, which is the opposite of what we usually do. He was in Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, which was...
He wasn't. He did the voice of one of the... Can't do animation, doesn't count.
That doesn't count, really?
Nope.
Even in Nick Cage world, where we're counting everything?
Doesn't count. He's in the they've made it into a TV series, and we definitely don't count that because that's TV.
Okay, fine. scrolling further back, he was in Joe in 2013, which was a kind of popular indie movie, a bit of a rugged one.
Oh yeah, like Mud. That was kind of like a Mud-alike.
It was kind of like a Mud. Yeah, exactly. He was really cool in Kick-Ass. I think that was one of his comeback points in Kick-Ass.
Oh, I hated his decision to talk like Adam West from Batman,
sure.
Batman TV show. I'd see him talking about that. He'd be in the interview circuit and he's made this decision. I've made this acting decision. I thought, yeah, he'd talk like Adam West. It's like, you've ruined this already pretty ropey film. It's okay. So annoying and jarring. And he thinks it's this like interesting choice.
He was in A Bad Lieutenant. People really liked that one.
Yeah, I remember quite enjoying that. What? I haven't rewatched it.
What's the one that he's in with... With Pedro Pascal. I didn't dream that, did I?
I don't know that one.
Yeah, he plays himself. He's in...
Yeah, The unbearable
weight of massive talent.
Yeah.
That was quite fun.
I got halfway through, I got waylaid and then couldn't be asked to finish it.
Yeah, but again, like it's an unusual film with an unusual script.
And usually... Charlie Kaufman adjacent.
Yes.
Not so.
Okay.
Like, all right, let's just, let's do a shit.
Lord of War? It's a good movie.
I mean, we should do that on, the podcast because I can't remember a thing about it.
Matchstick Man?
Oh, yeah, great. Love it. Love it.
Adaptation?
Yes.
Yeah. Gone in 60 Seconds. I know you hate that. Nope. Do you remember he was in 8mm? We definitely need to do that on the podcast at some point. But again, it's like, this is a little dark. And for the time, I know City of Angels I'd love to do, and the German version, whatever it's called.
Wings of Desire.
Wings of Desire. Face Off, The Rock, Con Air, Leaving Las Vegas.
Face Sock, Face Sock.
Face Sock.
Face Sock, The Rock, and Con Air. Those three, they're my, that was like, that's the meat of my teen years, right, action movies. But he doesn't get to that level of movie anymore. However people bang on about him and have taken him back on board, he'll never be in a flick like that ever again.
Well, maybe.
I mean, maybe they don't really make them anymore. They go straight to Netflix anyway. I think the Nick Cage cycle has come to an end also as well. I don't think he's going to get cast out again. Everyone's wise to his kind of his loop, and everyone's like, oh yeah, this is what he does.
Yeah.
And so now he's just, he's warmly regarded in the same way that Bill Murray is.
Would you like to play a little Nick Cage game?
It's a riddle. Speak, friend, and enter. What's the Elvish word for friend?
Melon. Inspired by the fact that Nick Cage has been in so many films and would happily do a turn as any character, seemingly, I'm going to give you the names of some popular movies from the past with ensemble-y type casts, and I want you to tell me which role in the film Nick Cage would be best placed to take part in, okay?
Ooh, that's a great game.
Right, here we go. Spotlight.
The Michael Keaton character?
Do you think? Probably, right? Like, what if
or
he was
Ruffalo?
I don't think he's got the chops for Ruffalo. I don't think, but he could have the chops. Imagine if he just played one of those side characters. Or what if he played, you know...
He doesn't play side characters.
Do you not think?
No.
Well, then this game's not going to work at all, because it's just going to... Then he's going to have to be the protagonist in every single one of these, right? Do you want to think that he might play? What about the John Slattery character? He's not a beta in Keaton's team. He's like, John Slattery plays Keaton's boss in that.
Yeah, I don't know Spotlight well enough, and I should rewatch it. Really, you could get me on it, but get me on another movie. It's a good game. You just picked the worst film you could have picked to start the game with.
Jesus fucking Christ.
That's called a compliment sandwich.
Love Actually.
Well, the Billy Bob Thornton American president character.
For fuck's sake. Yeah, okay. That's true. That's okay, fine. That is the case. Ocean's 11. Is he just Ocean?
Great. No. Well,
you just said that he doesn't play side characters. Adam pauses to try to work out whether his internal logic can be resolved.
Yeah, I wanted to keep the game fun, but yeah, he plays
Danny Ocean.
He shouldn't. He should play he should play Bradley Pitts and be a bit kooky and be the side character.
He would be so good as the side character.
Yeah.
What about Heat? The Val Kilmer role? Could he do it?
No.
No.
He's going to be the Pacino role.
You think?
Yeah.
He's the police officer. I buy him as a sort of like a doity sexy cop.
Yeah, he played a dirty sexy cop in Bad Lieutenant.
Yeah.
And he starts off as the baddie in Face Off, and then has his face off, and then is a goodie inside, even though his face is of the baddie. That's the plot of Face Off.
Fellowship.
Strider.
He plays Aragorn.
In fact, no.
Can he not play Boromir?
No, wait. He'd get the script, right? Nick Cage would get the script, and he would then call up Peter Jackson, and he'd say,
"Hey, Peter Jackson, hey.
Love the script.
I love the script. Peter, I love the script.
I'll do it.
I'll do it, Peter.
All of them. up all of them. Right, what, use your magic tricks and I'll be all of them.
Do you think he could do Gollum?
He would do the lot. He'd insist on doing all of them and it would be a one-man thing. And he'd go, use your tricks, use your miniatures, and let's film it for 10 years.
Okay. Pulp Fiction?
Vic Vega.
That's the John Travolta character.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one's fairly easy, I would say, isn't it? Let me find a hard
probably
one.
Do a better job, actually. Probably do a better job than John Travolta.
The Dark Knight. Is he just Batman? Is he Batman or is he the Joker? Does he see himself as Batman or the Joker?
Well, he loves comic books and he was going to be Superman for Tim Burton.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. So they'd done all the tests. There's some costume tests of Cage with long hair, with a really silly Tim Burton-esque Superman suit. He would work best as a kind of a stunt villain as Harvey Two-Face.
Yeah, I guess. But then,
I don't want to see his joke. He does that crazy Joker thing. It's a bit on the nose.
He could play Harvey Dent in The Dark Knight, right? And then gets his little Two-Face bit at the end.
Yeah.
I like that. Yeah. That's pretty good. Yeah.
I don't like it, but he'd do it.
I like it. Last one, Space Cowboys.
I've never seen it.
Man, you got to watch Space Cowboys.
He's too young for Space Cowboys.
No. There's only three famous people in Space Cowboys. The fourth guy, no one knows who that is. He just takes the fourth guy's spot.
James Garner.
No one knows who James Garner is, man. Who's James Garner?
The fourth guy in Space Cowboys.
Well, you've got me there.
Also, he's not old enough. They're all wrinkled in that. Tommy Lee Jones, he's not in the same bracket as Tommy Lee Jones. Christ alive. Hello.
Hey, is that Donald Sutherland?
Yes.
Well, hey, Donald, it's Tommy Lee Jones here.
Hey, Tommy.
How's it going? You okay?
Yep. All right, ticking over, thanks.
Well, listen, I'm calling because I'm pretty excited about our project here now. Project,
Space Cowboys.
Space Cowboys, that's right. And so, you know, it's you, me, and Clint so far. I was thinking, little rogue, Nick Cage, Nicolas Cage. What do you think?
I like the feeling, the notion, but I read, you know, the script I read, Tommy, was the thrust of it was that it's four old geezers. We were cohorts when we were younger. And then we all come back together because they need us. They need their Space Cowboys. And so, unless, I guess the script would need to rewrite one of them as younger. Maybe he could be the son of one of us. Or he could be the son of one of our friends who died on the moon. And then he could be the son. I like him as the son.
What about that? Would that? Because the only other person I've got coming up at the possibility is James Garner.
Who?
Yeah, well, exactly. He was recommended to me by the casting agents, James Garner, and I said he sounds like a football player.
I thought Clint was making this.
Well,
Tommy.
Yeah, I mean, look, Clint's name's on the movie poster, but
why? So why are you calling the casting shots? How's this happened?
Well, Clint, listen. You know, you like Clint just as good as me, the next man. But Clint needs help. Now, Clint, what can he do? He can get a movie on time, before time, and under budget. We all know that. And we know, aside from those sickly sweet opening shots of flowers and American music, he makes a good, tight movie that everybody enjoys. So maybe, say, I put his name on a couple of files here or there, and I convince the studio, let's say, that sure, it's Clint who's doing this one, but actually behind the scenes it's me, your man, Tommy Lee Jones, who's pulling all the strings. I've just been in Men in Black and I'm ready to direct my next feature.
Right, they probably would have given it to you. I don't know why you had to lie about it pretending to be Clint Eastwood.
They said they were worried that I would make it too weird. And then I said, what about Clint? They said, absolutely. He's a normal, straight, normal guy.
I mean, he's, you were not, okay, well.
I'm a little bit weird.
Yeah, you're going to go on to make the Three Burials of Someone something. But very dark movie. Dark Western. You love a Western. But this could be a space. This is a space Western. This is where you want to make it. It's where you want to make Space Cowboys, a space Western. We're going to be Native Americans up there on the moon.
Yeah.
Can we add that in there? Because if you're doing it, that's what we'd do.
Let's do it. Yeah.
We'd land on the moon and we'd like absolutely slaughter the fuck out of them. Give them like blankets covered in smallpox.
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Get Nick Cage?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Did you mean to call us Clint Eastwood?
No. What do you mean?
Clint, is this you? This is Clint, why Clint? Come on.
What? Hello?
Clint, why are you... I've got... Listen, why are you calling up to... Why are you pretending to be Tommy Lee Jones just to speak to me?
I'm not pretending to be anybody. I'm Clint Eastwood. You think Clint Eastwood would be able to talk with his teeth apart? No, not Clint. I'm Tommy Lee Jones. Damn you.
Well...
Should we play the box office game?
I'd bloody love to play the box office game. Now, you know me. Budget brackets estimated. Pour favor for the movie National Treasure. Not The Rock. Not the movie The Rock. I know you like that one. But what do you think to this one? National Treasure.
Well, it looks cheap. They couldn't afford a proper cast. And most of the money would have gone into Nick Cage's pockets. It's 80 mil?
100 mil.
So annoying, because that's the number that's going, you know.
Yeah.
The number's like 100, ding, ding, ding.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, I don't want it, I can't say it. I can't say 150, I can't say 100.
I've actually like given you a dressing down relatively recently about how you steer away from saying the round number, when it's often the round number. Just say the round number. You know?
Just that, there's an obscene amount of money to spend on a film that looks this shit.
Because
You could make this for 80 easily. If you could make it for 60.
You probably could, right? They're doing a lot. They made it just before you had drones or anything, right? So like, there's probably some helicopters in there and a couple of closing down parts of Washington, D.C. I'm sure that's complicated. You've got to bribe the president in order to close the road. I don't know how it works. But
how many films do you think feature on the steps outside of Abe Lincoln looking at the needle?
I would have thought there's probably 7,000 films that have that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd quite like to visit there. You know, I'm not really that keen on lots of American spots, but I've always sort of been interested to visit there because of how many films I've seen it in. You know, it'd be nice to go.
Yeah.
My favorite bit of this film, by the way, was the bit where they sit there and then on the steps of the JFK Memorial, or not that one, but wherever the National Archive, talking loudly about how they're going to steal it. You know, that's my favorite bit. Now, opening weekend US and Canada, November the 21st, I'll have you know, 2004. What are you thinking?
Yeah, I mean, this stinks of like a June, July, release.
Listen, when it's about the Declaration of Independence, it's Thanksgiving.
Well, they didn't release The Patriot around then.
No, but that wasn't about the Declaration of Independence. That one was about the Declaration of Independence.
Yeah.
That's the one that came first.
But no, yeah, that would make more sense. Okay, it's 100 mil. I think, you know, they made a couple of sequels to this. It's Bruckheimer. It's family fun. It's Dan Brown. I mean, it's not, but it feels like
it's
it.
It's Dan Brown.
Jumper territory. Sure. 30 mil?
35.
Ooh.
Not bad.
It's above jumper territory.
It's slightly above jumper territory. You're absolutely right. Mm. You're absolutely right. Okay, gross worldwide.
100 mil. Oh, it's probably going to perform as expected. And it's a really great role. I've got nothing but respect for it. So let's say, you know, it's going to get 3 stars. This is perfectly fine. Take the family.
So what you're saying is opening weekend was 35 million.
It's 350 mil.
Bang on the money.
Yeah, this is one of those films that did
performs to expected standards. Yeah.
Not to expected. It performs to the ten times thing.
Yeah, but yeah, the expected.
Not enough. Expected. Not enough movies do that to make that a thing.
Listen.
There's a lovely round number.
I know.
All 10 times.
And the listeners know that you're quite disappointed that you were correct here. You know, you were a little.
No, I'm not. I love it. I won the game.
You didn't win. Well,
excuse me, I won the game.
Win the game.
Excuse me.
Let's just go back over it again. You said 80 million, not 100, for the budget.
That's close.
It's not nowhere near close enough. And also, you should lose points for not just saying the round number. You know this is a $100 million movie. Opening weekend, you were close, and I'll give you that, but you're outside the 10%. And gross worldwide, you're on the money, which is lovely, but it's because you used my 10x rule whilst trying to be wrong so that you could make fun of it. And as it turns out, you were correct, and therefore, egg is on your face.
When was the last time you heard from your father?
Daddy.
All right, it's your turn, isn't it?
Oh, Christmas, is it?
Yeah, it is. Oh, Christmas Day, oh, Christmas Day. What for out far for Christmas? Ah, da, 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 da. Oh, happy birthday, happy birthday, happy birthday, James.
Shall we do the bit of the podcast where one of us reads out a list of movies they forgot with a view to catching out the other one on a movie they forgot?
Yes.
Andrew Richardson.
I've never seen it. What's that?
Andrew Richardson. Listener Andrew Richardson emailed in.
Oh, right.
And I like quite a lot of his suggestions, and so I'm going to read out a couple of his.
So they're yours now. I see how it works.
They're mine now.
Uh-huh.
Drive.
D-R-I-V-E.
Drive.
With gozzers.
Gozzers.
The gosling, the gosman.
Little baby gosling and Carey Mulligan.
Little baby gosling. I would never forget this film. Two reasons. Because of his stunning eyes. And then also because I don't eat. I don't sleep. I do nothing but think of you.
Culture's forgotten this movie.
No, it hasn't.
It has. It's not chatted about at all.
It's chatted about.
No, it's not. Not by cineasts. Not by anyone.
Not by cineasts. But cineasts aren't culture. That's ridiculous.
We are. We're the lifeblood of what matters.
You think you're a cineast?
Yeah. Well, I'm plugged into what they chat about.
You're plugged into the Matrix, my guy. If you think that the Drive isn't people remember Drive. They remember Drive.
I'm not saying they don't. Of course they do. Oh. But no one talks about it.
Well, people remember. It's not. I don't think it's a forget you forgot. I can get you on it if Andrew Jenkinson will allow.
I'd love for people on the Discord.
I'd love to watch it. I'll add it to my list.
Join the Discord and chat about Drive's place in the culture. Given I've added it
to my list.
I think given the place it held, which was insane, like people were wearing that dumb jacket and chatting about it,
yeah,
to comparatively to now.
No, it's faded,
the dip,
for sure.
The slide. Yeah, yeah. The slide.
I would say it's slid. I would say it's faded. It's faded from view. It's a lovely little picture.
I'm not saying it's
picture.
Not.
No, I know, you know, I know, yeah. You're not saying it's not. I'm simply saying it's never been off the streamers. People do, I think, remember it. I don't think it's definitely not a plum forgot you forgot. If you've forgotten it, I'm happy to get you on it for sure. Very happy to bring that up because I'd love to watch it. It's an easy watch, and it's also got that Kapersky song in it. Is that what the band's called? You know, I'll give you a night call, tell you how I feel.
I think Nick Winding Refn,
yeah,
his slide into shit film after shit film has taken the shine off it all, right, and it's moved all of his stuff.
Fair. He was going to be the next guy, but he's not.
Yeah.
Anyway, go on.
Going to stick with Kerry Mulligan, Promising Young Woman.
I never actually watched it, but I was talking to someone about this. That was Emerald Fennell's film, wasn't it?
It was.
I didn't watch it.
It's a shame. Shame. So we don't. It's very rare for us to talk about female filmmakers, but never mind.
Well, whose fault is that?
I try my best. Well, it's yours because I just read a set of female filmmakers.
Sorry, you picked one female filmmaker film that I haven't seen, and now I'm the problem. Pick another one. In 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, say something. Say one. Say one now. Say one now.
Oh, not for the game.
You can't even think of one. There you go. You're the problem. On you go.
I didn't want to play the game. I thought it was part of my... I thought I'd say some... I didn't want to use up a thing as my game.
I understand. We all know what happened there. But what's your next actual guess?
What's my next actual guess? This is a good shout from Chelsky Blue, which might have been on the Discord. Secret Life of Walter Mitty.
I'm not sure that I've actually seen it.
Ben Stiller, so forgettable.
Yeah, I never watched this film.
Oh, you dodged a bullet.
Apologies.
Okay. That's a shame.
Oh dear. I've got a new idea.
Yeah?
I think we should reintroduce some stakes into this. I don't like it that the stakes are gone, and I have an idea for how we could stake this up all nice and juicy.
I thought the stakes were always you have to do it in 5, and then if you don't, it's bragger's rights.
Yeah, but I think bragger's rights isn't enough for me. I think there's stakes. I think these are the stakes.
Well, okay, it's not fair for you to do that 3 movies in, but okay.
No, not for, it doesn't apply. Doesn't apply today. I'll be the first one to face the stakes next week, in all fairness, in full fairness, okay? And only if you accept my terms. But I think you're going to like them, because there's some fear in there for you, but there's trade-off too, okay? You know how we've sort of moved into an age where we cover a lot of different films on this podcast, some of which are Forget You Forgot, some of which are less canon, you know? I think maybe we should bring that formally in slightly more, right? The game becomes this. 5 attempts to get your opponent on a Forget You Forgot. Obviously, we both play the game honestly. If you strike out and you don't get them in 5, they have a film waiting at the end of that list that gets instantly triggered.
Yeah.
And then that's the one that you watch for the next episode. And that could be a film that the other person hasn't seen. It could be a film that you really want them to see. It could be a film that they don't want to watch. You know, that them's the stakes. We know what the films are going into it, so it's not a secret surprise. I could think of one for next time. This is me in 2 weeks. Next week, you could have a film ready so that if I don't get you and we get all through these 5 gates, then bang, we got to watch whatever it is that you've got there.
Yeah, no, well, you can introduce that now. I don't mind it. I love it.
You want me to introduce that right now?
Yeah, do it.
But that you'd only have two more opportunities to get me before we had to watch that film.
Well, they've got ones that I know you forgot and you'll have to do.
Well, that's how you get around it, right? What do I want you to watch that you've never... Oh, what was I just saying you should watch? What was it? Moments ago I was saying you got to watch this film.
Space Cowboys.
That's it. It's Space Cowboys. Okay, if you don't get me in five today or any future day, it's Space Cowboys that we watch. Okay?
Okay.
You've got two more chances.
The Machinist.
Fuck.
I don't want to watch this at all.
I don't want to watch this either. That's the plummest of plums.
That's listener Donal's suggestion.
Oh, Donal, it's so depressing. I remember him being... Now you've said it, I remember the shape of his sick when he's at the Ferris wheel.
Let's just both veto Donal's The Machinist.
Veto. I don't want to watch it. I'm not interested in watching thin Christian Bale get acting awards for going insane. It's just so depressing. Is it Marissa Tomei in that film?
Can't remember. That's what's so, it's so plum.
Fuck. It's so plum. Kudos for the suggestion, but I don't want to watch that.
Well, and you've said before that I could get you on this, and you just said, oh, I don't want to do it. It's Donnie Darko.
Okay, fine. I mean, I haven't said before that you could get me on it. I've said I'll add it to my list to get you with it, because you clearly have forgotten it, and I haven't. But I agree. I don't want to watch The Machinist, so I will accept this.
Nice, thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Even after I was like really going to be really horrible to you at this episode.
You mean sabotage me?
Yeah.
You're going to lure me in like some sort of predator and then attack me when I was at my most vulnerable.
As if I would have been able to get anything. You know, you would have smelled it.
I'm tired today. You could have got me. No. I wasn't smelling it.
I didn't even try.
You could have got me.
I told you.
No, you should have tried.
You didn't like the movie, so it didn't work. I'll do it on another movie.
Yeah. I can't believe you thought I... That's the thing that I'm more offended by than the idea that you would try and catch me and trap me and trick me into being afraid and upset. I don't mind that. I quite like the idea of that happening. What I'm more upset about is the notion that you really believe that I would love National Treasure. That, you know, that I'm the kind of person that would like this film. That just tells me you don't understand what motivates me with films. You don't have the finger on the Joe pulse in the way that you think you do. You know, you see a shit film and you go, oh yeah, he's gonna love that because he's an idiot who was 13 years old when that came out. It's not as simple as that, my friend. It's much more, I'm much more nuanced than you could ever imagine. Yeah, keep digging, you weasel.